Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 111. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, congratulations on winning the top podcast of 2019, buddy.
Hey, congratulations to you, Pete.
Yeah, man, I was pretty excited when I heard that. Did you actually hear the message?
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Yeah, well, for those of you that didn't, I've got a little clip for you here, John.
Favorite podcast, Mr. Pete Fletcher, John Nicholson over at VMware with a Virtually Speaking Podcast. And then they did a lot of great stuff on that one, and that one really evolved and become very popular. And I enjoy listening to it, and I've been out a few times myself, and definitely well-deserved there.
Yeah, man. So it was beautiful, man. The crowd stood up and cheered. It was quite an event, man. I
think excited. That music actually played in my head also.
So. And John leaned into the microphone and said,
"Thank you. You love me. You really love me."
I'll be giving my 20-minute acceptance speech now. So yeah,
exactly. Well, we don't have time for that because we've got none other than Mr. Frank Dennerman joining us this week to talk all about all things cloud. You know, you guys know Frank. Frank's been around forever. He's been doing so many great things at VMware, moving around. And so we're looking forward to hearing what he's up to. And then we're just going to do some cloud conversations. So with that, Mr. Frank Dennerman, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, guys. And congratulations on winning the category. Well deserved.
Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate that.
Hey, so John, tell me how you feel, because every time when you do your intro, you actually typically complain about how life is rough to you and all that stuff. And I'm missing it on this episode. So
I'm feeling breezy, Frank. I'm feeling breezy. I got the windows open. It's 67 degrees outside. So I would actually say life's pretty good right now for a Texan, you know, enjoying non-horrific heat or muggy cold.
It's about time, my goodness. Well, I am in a fantastic mood, Frank, and that is because in a couple of weeks, I'm getting to go see my number one of all-time favorite rap group from when I was a kid, which is Eric B. and Rakim.
Jesus Christ, are they still playing?
Dude, they've been gone forever, but they're having a reunion tour, and I am very excited, yeah. So
yeah, I can imagine that.
Me and my middle-aged awesome friends are gonna we're gonna go down there and be kids again. It's gonna be fun.
Nice.
Yeah, so Frank, man, how you been?
I've been doing really well.
You got a new job, right?
Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out how long it actually already is. I think about 6 months or something. I joined the office of the CTO of the cloud platform business unit. And that means we're responsible for the core. So ESXi and vCenter and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And VMC, which is VMware Cloud and AWS, but also VMware Cloud in your data center. What we like to call Project Dimension, and at the edge, which is also Dimension right now. We're getting new names, but that will happen when we release those things. Yeah, so that's basically the stuff we're working on and figuring things out on what to do in the next 3 years.
That's exciting stuff. That was one of our more popular episodes last year, was when we talked all about Edge Core Cloud after VMworld, talking all about Project Dimension. So good stuff there. And I'm glad you're here with us today because we want to talk about the various cloud computing use cases that are out there. Now, I know every company's different, but I'm sure like a lot of major companies have different, you know, whether it's business critical applications that have different dependencies and different security requirements and SLAs. And then, you know, test and dev environments have different requirements as well. A lot of companies still have legacy applications that can't move to the cloud. But I'm curious what your experience is as you speak to customers. What are some of the more typical cloud computing use cases that you see?
Yeah, that's the interesting one because is there one? That's the question, right?
Yeah.
So when you look at cloud, let's look at the definition of cloud and the way you consume it. You can have platform as a service, software as a service, infrastructure as a service, and that's all cloud, right? So that's the first thing. And then how do you consume it as an organization? Are you doing something external without connecting it, or are you connecting two different platforms together? All these questions, right? And Everybody has their own strategy. So there is not a single thing like what we used to say is virtualization. Yeah, virtualization means VMware in your data center, right? There was something else, but I believe a handful of people or organizations deployed other hypervisors. But virtualization was VMware, right? But now cloud is so different. Now let's take a look at the three big ones: Amazon, of course, Azure, and Google Cloud Platform. In a recent report, we saw that VMC, VMware Cloud and AWS, is actually the fourth largest cloud provider right now. So that's a really, really good achievement in less than 18 months or something.
Heck yeah!
Yeah. So, but if you look at those things, right? Now, how do you consume those services? How do you deploy your workload on those things? And I saw a tweet from Eric Wright, Disco Posse, today. They released a report on cloud stuff, and they said that the majority of organizations that run to run cloud, they look for mobility. Now, that's an interesting point, right? Because what do you mean exactly by mobility? Are you talking about the application, or are you talking about the whole construct of the VM and all that stuff? And if you look at that, how are you going to achieve that if you know that every cloud provider uses a different instance, a different format, right? We have VMs, right? Let's call it a VM. But Amazon has an EC2 instance.
Right,
Azure exactly. has something else, right? You cannot move a VM directly on EC2, right? So what about that mobility? So those are interesting questions, right? And I think over time we will see something play out. But the interesting thing is that we need to stop thinking about in a binary way. What you typically see in the media, right? It's either this or that, or the new one is going to replace the old one. That's never going to happen, right? We still have mainframes. So come on, stop with the replacing stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's not there.
I've actually seen a graph of IBM's mainframe revenue, and it just kind of ticks. Yeah, it ticks down, it ticks back up. It's kind of, you know, it just follows the normal seasonal trends. It's not really doing anything. And the challenge is you've got how many billion lines of Fortran code out there? And wait, I'm going to reply. And this is responsible for, you know, some bank core function. And wait, we're going to save money if we spend 10 years rewriting this? Huh? Like,
no. Well, that's an interesting point, right? The rewriting stuff just to merely rewrite stuff.
Yeah.
Just to get it to the new platform. Really? Is this the stuff you want to do? No, right?
This is why virtualization exists, is because people didn't want to completely rewrite their applications or replatform natively on a lot of things. They just wanted P to V and Zombion, if we go back to the early days.
Because it's really easy. A lot of the applications that are running today run just fine, right? If you build something new, sure, you're going to look for the newest technology and figure out a way to connect all these things, right? That's normal. But if you look at the majority of the applications running today, generating revenue for the business,
right,
they are good as they are right now, right? When you go to a refresh, sure, you might want to refactor. That's not weird to think about that. But just to grab all your applications and say, look, I've got these old or traditional applications, and I need to rebuild them. The first question is, why? Why exactly? Are you going to remove your data center? Are you going to stop with operating your data centers by yourself? Then maybe a replatform is just fine. But if you're just doing this because you want to be hip and new, right?
Well, and thinking of kind of two counter pushbacks I see is, you mentioned, okay, you want to go to data center zero. If those are existing VMs that you can just vMotion out of that DC, power it off in, you know, 45 days, then who cares about the replatform for there if you already have that mobility? The other thing also is I've seen some noise in the news lately around some public, I think it was Lyft and a couple other companies, what they're spending on cloud or on their existing OpEx for infrastructure. And some people are making a big deal. And then you look at how much that spend is in the total scheme of the revenue of that company. And it's maybe we could throw 40 engineers at trying to optimize this and replatform and make this more efficient or build out a DC or do something. But if it's, you know, if it's 3% of the total operating cost of the company, who cares?
So when I saw that news, it was $8 million or something like that per month or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you saw that, did you think that was a costly thing? Yeah. Do you think it was a lot?
Well, if you're spending $50 million on engineers, you know, and telling those engineers, hey, we need you to slow down, or we need you to be more efficient, you know, on this, you know, it's kind of like arguing over, oh, we need to go to Folgers in the break room because we're spending too much on, you know, fancy coffee.
So the thing is, if you look at that number, I don't think it's too much at all, because look at the scalability that they have. Look at the prognosis that they need to do in order to scale out or to do all those things.
Yeah.
And project that against the cost and the effort that you need to do in order to do this in-house. Let's say you do a Dropbox and you say, I'm going to move out and I'm going to do it by myself.
Yep.
Good luck with your 8 million.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's nothing. Right. And then, yeah. In 3 years' time, you're going to do the same thing because you need to do a migration project again because you need to buy new hardware. No, good luck.
Well, that's kind of a big attraction to any infrastructure as a service. You can just provision that. I know for a long time that was, you know, when Amazon first came out and we were using VMware Cloud on AWS and customers were like, wait, I can actually provision my servers. You know, I don't have to buy my physical servers. I don't have to stand them up. I don't have to wait for them to actually come in before I actually deploy them and all that. I just, you know, it now just becomes a service that I order on demand. So simplicity, cost, all of that is a factor, but I think the question I've always had was mobility. Do people really want to get caught up into a full cloud solution?
I don't think so. It's just because there's not enough time and it takes a lot of effort, and the end result is exactly the same, but it runs somewhere else, right? So look at the risk involved. And the risk is that, will it basically run the same as it was running before? Will it perform the same way as it was running before? Right? And those two risks, a CTO is by nature risk averse, yeah. Right? So the last thing you want to do is talk to him and say, look, I'm going to move this and it will cost you some money, a lot of time, a lot of coordination within the organization, because I have to inform my users, I have to do a test run with my users, all that stuff. So these people that are typically doing other work, I need to basically get them away from their work in order to do what? Run the same somewhere else, right? And that's the beauty of being able to migrate or expand or just basically workload mobility by using the same format. And that's the key feature of what I think from VMC, right? It's the same platform, but it runs somewhere else. So now you just can move things whenever you want. The only thing what you need to think about is the moment, right? So maybe you want to get rid of your data center. Or with HCX, we had one customer which was really brilliant. They were on 5.0, which is not supported anymore. And they had, I want to use a word which I can't, a lot. a lot of servers with a lot of VMs. But they, in order to be compliant again, they needed to buy another platform in order to get supported again. Well, with HCX, they basically moved it from 5.0 into VMC, all the VMs were supported again just by doing a vMotion. That is really brilliant. No procurement whatsoever, right? No, where can I place this in my data center? Is there enough network connectivity? What about AC? All that stuff, right? It was perfect. Now, but the reality is it's also for DR, right? So that's what I said about the moment. Sometimes you want to do mobility for migration stuff. Sometimes your data center is on fire or a hurricane is coming along, right? Perfect. Just move it out. You can have a DR site just by clicking a few options in a web console. That's it.
Yeah,
right?
And before you go much further, you brought up an acronym that some folks might not be familiar with, which is HCX. Give us the two-minute explanation of what HCX is.
Wow, that's you need to have Imad Yunus for that on.
We want to get him on
the webcast. Get him on. But basically, it's a mobility with a form of vMotion and replication. So you can do workload mobility without vMotioning your VMs for that long, because you do a compute and a storage vMotion, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, so it's one of those things that allows you to move your workload without reskilling or using different tool sets. That's another thing that's really crucial, right? If you want to use other cloud platforms, you need to figure out how does that work? What settings do I need to use? What implementations and implications do they have on my performance and on my, for example, resiliency, right? And that's another one, right? If you look at, and I'm not digging on AWS, but the thing is,
yeah,
if you want to run a workload in EC2, they basically say, look, this is a cloud platform. This is a cloud infrastructure. We have different levels of resiliency. That means you need to figure something out in your application in order to survive an infrastructure failure. And that's good. And if you're well prepared for that, that's fine. But what if you basically just want to move it somewhere else? Now, with VMC, what you can do is you can basically move the VM from your on-prem to in cloud, and you can actually use and you can span your SDDC cluster across multi-AZs, multi-availability zones. That's the way a Amazon data center is being built up. It's an availability zone. It's its own compute, its own network, all stuff. What we do is we abstract that. We stretch a logical network across those and we abstract it. So what we can do is we can move between AZs and we can fail over between AZs without the customer having to re-IP or whatever they want to do. So in a sense, we are abstracting away the infrastructure of the cloud provider in a way what we've done with compute in the 2000s.
Yeah, but when you talk about AZs though, our availability zones, are you referring to AZs just in Amazon or other data centers, other cloud providers?
As of now, we are running VMC only in VMware, in Amazon.
Oh, right? Okay. Yeah, that's AWS. What I figured that. I thought you were breaking some news on me here. I was like,
no.
I was like, whoa, this is going to be really good.
I think I'm not on that pay grade yet to show you that type of news.
Okay.
That's something for Pat to talk about. So get him on.
Then. Okay.
No, but the reality is, I have no idea. Our focus within VMware is our strategic partnership with Amazon, right? So that's the stuff that we're working on. It's the largest cloud provider. It's the most prevalent. And if you look at a lot of customers and in those reports, they are targeting Amazon Web Services.
Oh yeah, of course.
There, right? So with that in mind, so what we're doing is we're figuring out like, okay, what is our strength? And our strength, VMware's strength has always been about transparency and abstraction over the years with every level. Let's look at vSAN, right? Abstract away, provide a policy-driven environment where you don't have to look at how do I need to set up my LAN, what type of services do I connect to my LAN. No, we're doing this at a VM level, right? So that's your stuff. That's really, really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So with those types of abstraction levels, what we thought was we can do the same at cloud providers. So think about, for example, let's stay on the topic of vSAN, right? Within VMC, you can deploy a cluster that is backed by local disks. So SSDs inside an NVMe device inside a host,
yep.
And you have your AFA vSAN. But coming up shortly, or maybe it's already out there, you guys might know better than me, is the ability to connect your cluster to EBS. Is it already available?
Elastic vSAN?
Yeah, Elastic vSAN, that's shipping.
Oh yeah, I was in okay. M5.
Okay, nice. See, I always do forward looking, so I don't know what exactly is released yet.
VMC is just, it's always shipping, so it's hard to keep up with all the milestones going out the door.
Oh yeah.
So with EBS backing, that this is really cool because what we've been providing the customers is a cluster local with local disk and a cluster with EBS. Now what a customer can do is they can deploy a VM on a cluster with EBS backing and see whether this performs or not, whether this meets the requirement of that particular application. Now if it doesn't, you just storage vMotion it. And you vMotion it to a cluster with local SSDs, right?
Yep.
That's so brilliant. That's abstracting the infrastructure from AWS. This is something AWS cannot do by itself because typically you order or you select a EC2 instance and you have to select a particular storage class that cannot be changed, right? So that is the power of VMware. We can abstract cloud providers.
Oh, yeah. I love Elastic vSAN. Yeah, we talked all about that on episode 104. So if you're listening to this and you have not listened to episode 104, you're going to want to check that one out. That's when we had Glenn Sizemore on, and we talked all about how VMware inside of VMware Cloud on AWS can attach those EBS volumes. And it just, man, great story. Great story, not only for the, you know, the ability to scale and to have a lot more storage capacity, but then also, as we mentioned, the ability to recover from maybe a failed host and not having to rebuild all of those components and those objects on the new host, but to just reattach those EBS volumes that we had on the previous host. So very, very cool solution.
Yeah.
So Frank, I know you've been doing a lot of work with Kubernetes. Does the deployment of Kubernetes matter when we're talking about location, whether it's on premises or in a certain cloud? Is there any value that you can get for deploying it to cloud versus on premises?
So it's all about the effort of the infrastructure team, right? When you want to consume a container, it doesn't matter what the underlying infrastructure is. Yeah, to a specific point at performance and all that stuff. But overall, for the developer and for the application team, it doesn't matter. They just want to deploy in a particular infrastructure platform, which is what Kubernetes is. So you have VMware virtualization, which basically provides you a VM. And then you have Kubernetes, which provides you, with, together with Docker Rocket, a container. But overall, it's infrastructure, right? So at one point, the developer doesn't care. The cool part is, you don't have to run it on-prem. You can also run it in cloud somewhere else, or you can use a PKS version somewhere where you automate the deployment of Kubernetes. So I think that shows the future of the way we're going to consume IT services, right? At one point, you just don't want to know anymore where it runs, right? And I think that ties back to the initial remark that I made about binary, right? Old versus new, and one ID versus the other, or one option versus the other. One point, you have to stop and you have to consider that we're doing everything in a hybrid way. It doesn't matter anymore. So a lot of what you saw in the past was people or CTO saying, look, do I need to run it on-prem, or am I going to leverage cloud? And now that debate is over. Yes, everybody's going to use cloud, but in what way, right? And the next thing is, the next question that a lot of people have is where, right? Is it Amazon? Is it Google? Is it Azure? Is it whatever?
Yeah.
And the reality is, it doesn't matter anymore for most. For particular things, it does, right? Specific things. And that ties into the abstraction story again. A lot of things can be abstracted, can be commoditized, but there are a few things that a particular cloud provider really shines at, such as TensorFlow at Google, or maybe S3 at Amazon, or DynamoDB or whatever, right? Or RDS. Those are things you want to specifically have that. But the rest, it doesn't matter, right? So it's the same thing with your application landscape. It's not all on-prem or all in cloud. So Joe Bagley has this really cool story about a customer, and that customer is a car manufacturer, and they have this application that ties into their business process, and the business process is tires, the number of tires in the factory. So how many do I have on stock? How many am I using, right? Now, if you look at the old way, typically what happened was they had a front end, a mid end, and a back end. And in the back end, it actually recorded how many tires there were. And so they had to call up the tire manufacturer to say, give me a new set of tires. So okay, what they've okay. done, they used every form, right? Because cloud is interesting, but think about where you're going to run your application. That can be on-prem in your data center, in cloud, but also at the edge, right? So what they built this application that was using on-prem VMs, the database. They're using in cloud for their application, and they're running at the edge. They're running sensors, and they're running some order entry system.
Oh, nice.
At the edge, right? So what happens when somebody picked up a tire from the warehouse that was being scanned and it was being forwarded to the database, which was running on-prem? But the idea was, we need to provide insight to the tire manufacturer so they know when our stock is running low, right? So they use an application, but you don't grant your suppliers access to your on-prem database. So they spun out, basically they exported the data to an S3 bucket in Amazon, right? Now, if you look at all the dots, we're talking about infrastructure as a service, software as a service for the application, containers as a service as well for the stuff that's running at the edge, something for the sensors as well. So you're hitting all spots in the stack from the stack of containers as a service, but also every location, right? That's the stuff where we're going to.
I love that. That's like a perfect example of not choosing on-premises versus cloud. This is you're literally getting edge, core, and cloud to serve one specific task or job. That's actually a great example.
I also like the example here of, you know, this is a cross-company problem that we're looking at solving here, because people will do all kinds of things and hack jobs internally. You know, everyone internally can get access to the database, but you've got data that needs to be processed across multiple different, you know, independent sovereign entities.
Yeah, this is a classic case of aligning your IT with a business process, right? What are you going to solve? How are you going to generate revenue, or how are you going to reduce cost? This is it, right? This is basically Kaizen system, just-in-time system developed in the, I believe, late 90s by Toyota, right? And this is something you see. And with the ability of all these new IT services, you can actually improve this or make it more efficient, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. As you were saying, Frank, it really doesn't matter where it is. There are so many factors to determine where you're going to put your infrastructure.
So, Frank, with all these different services and all these different things coming out of VMware, you know, and VMC and some of these different cloud services, this is changing the relationship with the customer. So previously we would chip software, we would throw it at the customer and say, go have fun. And if it breaks, give us a call. How is that relationship changing going to a SaaS model? What is that looking like for those conversations? How is it changing the direction of products?
So it has changed the entire way we operate within the company, right? And I believe we're transitioning to a service model company. And that is interesting in every way that you can imagine. Like you said, with VMC, we are releasing so much. It's insane. So think about the release cycle of vSphere, which typically was 18 months. We had a full release cycle and then we had a point release.
Yep.
Typically took 18 months. So everything was done in that 18 months. So we started to investigate what we needed to improve over the last version, but we also wanted to introduce new features and we started to develop. And then there was time for testing and there was time for rework. And then there was time for distributing and doing betas and all that stuff. Now with VMC, that's a quarterly release cycle, 18 months to quarterly. That is seriously insane, right?
So
all the way you interact with people, not like you become a different personality, but the expectations of people and the way they need to deliver and the way you communicate internal processes, like how are you going to communicate this in a timely fashion so that everybody knows what's coming or in what release it's coming and all that stuff. That had to change as well. Right, so everything changed.
Frank, and why did it change? Why did VMC change this cadence for vSphere? What do you think the main reason would be?
Well, I think that's a normal progression of the way software is released right now in this world. Right, it's an ongoing thing. It's something that what we see with other cloud providers as well. Look at Amazon. Look at the number of features they release every time they have a show. It's insane. But the reality is that we also do something on-prem, right? Most of our customers are still on-prem, but the reality is that we still need to bake this into our own product, right? Yeah. In vSphere or on-prem vSphere. There's no different name for it, but let's call it like that. This changed for us as well, because now every new feature is actually released in VMC and then is going to be baked into the on-prem version, right? So the upcoming feature will have some features that was already tested out and deployed in VMC. So there's a different test model to it as well, right? It's a really interesting thing. It's something that somebody is studying business economics or that type of stuff, they can do a thesis on this for sure, right? Yeah. How to transform a product type company into a service type company. That's exactly
that was exactly the point of my question, because I had talked to some other folks that were working with VMC, and that seemed to be the thing. Like, you know, you're using this product that exists, you know, that had existed primarily for on premises, and then all of a sudden it's being used in this cloud as a service, and then you know, things come up that didn't come up for an on premises scenario, and then what do you do? Well, you're not going to wait for the next release. You're going to change it immediately. You're going to get it so it works. And then some of this stuff actually might help on premises. And so then what do you know? It's what's working in VMC could find itself helping you on premises in the next release.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the whole model. And another thing is, because we're responsible for our own management of all the clusters of our customers. So we manage vCenter, we manage the ESXi host, we patch the ESXi host, we do all the networking. Now, some of the shortcomings actually are more viewable to the engineers, right? So now they're being
exposed.
Yes.
I like it.
I was looking for that word.
Yeah.
exposed to the shortcomings of particular things. Like now they're getting the feedback of some of our customers, right? We always try to incorporate the feedback of our customers, but we cannot do everything, right? But now... Sure. There are some interesting things going on that we see happen that maybe wasn't there if we were on-prem only. So it works in a lot of ways, good ways.
I like it. Awesome. All right. Well, so Frank, VMworld's coming up. I know you're doing a lot of stuff these days. I know you've done a lot of work with VMware Cloud. What's going to be your primary focus for this VMworld? Do you have anything? Have you considered any good sessions that you're going to be presenting on?
Yeah. So because I'm not technical marketing, we are not expected to actually present, right? So that's something for technical marketing. So, but look, it's always an honor to be at VMworld, and it's always cool to be on stage. So I was talking to Duncan, and we were like, okay, what can we do that is interesting, but it's also tying back to the stuff that we've been doing for a long time. So we were looking at presenting HA and DRS in a hybrid cloud world.
Ooh, yes.
So we were talking about the new stuff for HA and DRS on-prem, and also how it works in cloud. Because although it's the same thing, you consume it differently. There are some different things that are interesting to know, right? So that's the one that we already talked about internally. Basically, we proposed it to the team, like, can we do this? And now it's waiting for to hear whether they think it's an interesting one.
All right.
And the second one, and I'm not sure yet, because it's going to be a very complex one, but it's going to be 60 minutes of NUMA.
Ooh, well, didn't Cascade Lake just get released yesterday, or they announced it, not shipping to customers?
Yeah, but not only Intel. I did some work on AMD Epic as well. And there's a lot of people who commented to me. Actually, AMD reached out to me as well, saying, look, this was the most extensive article that we saw on this topic. So thank you for this, which is always really, really great when the vendor reaches out to you. The interesting thing is, well, for me, the interesting thing is, will it be interesting for customers? And 60 minutes of NUMA? Look, I'm not the only one presenting, right? So a lot of people have 20, 30 sessions already. They went through 30 sessions. So when you want to hear 60 minutes of NUMA, wow.
Well, I think that's a session that I'm going to need to be able to sit down and have some fresh coffee and devote, you know, half a day to pausing and dissecting. So that may be one I go for the recording on.
Oh, that's a good one. So I get basically to present for an empty room.
Yeah. I'm gonna do what I call the aspirational registration. I'll register myself for that session and then not go, because that never happens. But
well, if it's anything like the host resources deep dive sessions, which usually have about 500 or so people in it, I think
it'll yeah.
I think there'll be plenty of people attending.
And that's the interesting one, right? We're doing this in San Francisco for the first time since years. Now, the Moscone Center, have you guys seen the new Moscone Center, by the way?
No, I haven't been there.
Oh, that thing is massive. So remember North and South? The North and South?
Yeah.
They build a couple of stories on top of it, and they connected it via an air bridge.
Nice.
So I'm not going to have to go keep crossing the street between sessions and risk death in traffic or
or get
to listen to the crazy conspiracy theories from the protesters outside.
No, but that guy is really cool. But you can just stand there for 10 minutes and just listen to him, right?
I now know who secretly runs the world. Hint, it's not
No, but the thing is, maybe Moscone has bigger rooms as well. Because when we were at Moscone, once I presented for 1,800 people.
Ouch.
Back amazing. In the day. Oh, man. When you walk into your room and you see ushers ushering people into the... And you look like, I cannot even see the stage. Yeah.
Yeah. When you have six ushers and you know, two AV guys and... Yeah, it's
full size cameras like the one they have at NBC and all that stuff. So yeah. Well, but that coming from somebody who was never good at talking. Actually, I'm believe it or not, I'm introverted, so it's always a challenge to do this.
Really? Come on, I don't see you as an introvert personally, but and I do. I would say I do love going to your sessions. I get a lot of information from that. You make things make sense. You're good. You have a teacher's mindset. So I enjoy your sessions.
You. Well, one thing I did want to ask you, Frank, before we end, just a slight hint on that Numa thing. What are some of the challenges that you're seeing? Because AMD did this first, obviously, and Intel is doing it now, of having multiple NUMA nodes on the same die.
On the same die. Now, the interesting thing, the mindset to have is to understand that it's not a problem to have multiple NUMA nodes. That's one. But if you're squeezing out the last bit of performance, and if you want to have the most consistent performance, that's where you want to make sure that it fits inside a single NUMA node. Now, the more NUMA nodes you have on a die, on the CPU package, the thing that you can hold in your hand, that's interesting because there's a limited amount of space, right? So what you typically see with AMD is smaller NUMA nodes, smaller local memory connected. So the pool itself of locality, if you want to call it like that, is extremely small. So what you see with AMD, especially the new one, the EPICs, is it's a perfect system if you have small workloads. Think about containers, right? Think about that. That's nice for it.
Yeah.
But if you have a monolith, a big database spanning multiple cores, right? Spanning even across multiple CPUs. Yeah, that is not an interesting one to have, right?
Then your interconnect speeds start becoming more than whatever that bus is between. So,
and that's the key, right? It's all about understanding your workload, but also understanding the impact it has on the rest of the system. Because if you start to use a lot of these interconnects, that means you're impacting other workloads as well, right? So on a host level scale. So it's so interesting to see, but the reality is what a lot of people do is they say NUMA is bad, so I want to avoid NUMA everywhere possible. No, that's not the case, right? It's all about the fact that you can understand that the scheduler is well-versed to figure out multi- or wide VMs, as we call it, a VM that spans multiple NUMA nodes. There's nothing wrong with that. It works perfectly, but it's all about the level of consistency you want to have. If you really want to squeeze it out, that's where you want to dig into the details.
So that's good to hear that that's getting taken care of and handled there.
Well, yeah. If we need to learn more about NUMA, I've got the book right here in my hands. It's the Host Resources Deep Dive by Frank Dennerman and Niels Hagort. Have you read it? It's pretty good.
That's definitely going to need an update, though, for these new processors.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Frank, listen, we will be seeing you at VMworld. Looking forward to that. And maybe we should get you on and do a whole NUMA deep dive on here. I think that would be a very interesting conversation. At a very minimum, maybe a performance discussion with you would be great. So we love having you on, man. You always bring a wealth of information. So we'd love to have you come back on soon.
Awesome ideas, guys. And of course, I'm more than happy to get back on the best podcast of the virtualization community.
I love it. Thank you, buddy. That is an endorsement right there. All right. Well, Rakim tells me it's time to go. And so, Frank, big thanks for joining us this week. We'll see you next week. But until then... Bye for now.
I ain't no joke. I used to let the mic smoke. Oh, yeah. Now I slam it when I'm gonna make sure it's broke. When I'm going, no one gets on, cause I won't let nobody press up and mess up the scene I set. I like to stand in a crowd and watch the people wonder.
Booyah.
Damn. But think about a thing you understand. I'm just an addict, addicted to music. Maybe it's a habit.
Enough of this jibber jabber.